As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
This week, Nottingham Forest became the latest club to be sanctioned for breaking profitability and sustainability rules. A four-point deduction for Forest, with the possibility of an appeal that could go beyond the end of the season, with Everton facing a second charge. We could see the relegation battle decided in the courts. So is Pierre Sarr in danger of doing more harm than good? And can there ever be a perfect solution? I'm Ayoa Kimwalere. Welcome to the Athletic FC podcast. Here for this one, we have The Athletic's Matt Slater and Tim Spears as well. Matt, yet again, another points deduction, and this time it's Nottingham Forest. Just how significant was this week's ruling against Forest?
Minus 4 points. They've been dropped into the relegation zone. It's every point is precious, so highly significant. And, you know, it's only the second breach we've had under these rules that have been in place for a decade in the Premier League, with Everton being the first. So I'd argue very significant, you know, both in the context of the history of the league, but also very specifically for the club.
Is it strange, and I'm sure a lot of football fans will be sort of sitting here thinking, hold on a second, Everton got deducted a certain amount of points, but Forest seem to have gone slightly over, I say slightly over, probably double the amount that Everton did in terms of a breach.
Look, yes, and this is the debate, isn't it? And it's all explained in great detail in the judgment, which I know is not, it's not for everyone, but you know, if you do have the time, it is worth sort of at least sort of trying to read it. Although I do appreciate it, they're quite tough reads. Forest's breach, if you like, was 34.5 million, whereas Everton's was 19.5, and you know, this is the, you know, Forest's lawyers made this point, and the Premier League's, you know, made points back. They got into a real sort of debate about whether you should focus too much on the number or whether it should be almost put in bands where you have sort of minor breaches, significant breaches, or major breaches. And I think that the commission, the panel, and it really is only the sort of third panel, if you like, that has looked at these rules, with the Everton's first hearing being the first panel, its appeal panel being its second look, and this being the third. And I think what we're learning here, this is the nature of law, this is the nature of justice, of arbitration in particular. You know, different panels view things differently. They try and measure each case on its own specific circumstances, particularly when you're dealing with relatively new legislation or new pieces of rules. Now, while these rules are new, they're 10 years old, this is the first time they've sort of come up. You know, these are the first breaches of these rules. And there's a period while we sort of search and reach for precedents, you know, for benchmarks and for guidelines. And of course, as we discussed at length in the Everton case, the Premier League purposefully didn't set guidelines and sanctioning benchmarks, if you like. What people should always understand is that the Premier League does what the Premier League clubs tell it to do. The Premier League clubs set the rules. So always have that in mind. And they wanted these panels to have discretion. They wanted the panels to have the discretion because they wanted to be able to weigh up each case on its own merits. And to get to the point with Forrest, Forrest's number, its threshold, was 61 million because it had spent two previous years. It's a three-year rolling period, and I'm going to add another complexity here by saying it's actually 4 years because the first two are an average of the two COVID seasons. But just broadly speaking, all these PSR, these FFP calculations are based on three-year rolling periods. Now, two of those for Forest were EFL seasons, were championship seasons, where they have a lower threshold. Broadly speaking, you're allowed to lose £13 million a season, not £35 million a season as you are in the Premier League. So Forest had 13, 13 equals 26 plus one season of Premier League threshold, which is 35, which gets you to 61. So their threshold was 61. Their overall loss was 95.5. Now, Everton had a threshold of 105, so 35 plus 35 plus 35. They bust that by 19.5. So their loss was, let's say, 125-ish. That's the point that Forrest were making. Yes, our breach is bigger than Everton's, but their loss was bigger than ours. And they also made all these arguments about how, look, you know, we'd just come up, we had to spend, we came up through the playoffs, we weren't a parachute club. They made all these sort of mitigating arguments that actually were rejected. But they sort of made the point that let's not focus too much on the number, the breach, and let's look at our circumstances. Our circumstances were very different to Everton's. Everton's was a significant breach. I think we can agree that ours was a significant breach too. So let's treat them both the same and not focus too much on the number. And guess what? The commission agreed with them.
Yeah. Tim, Wolves were sort of brought into this conclusion as well. Can you just explain how Forest used Wolves within their conclusion?
They were quite surprised to be dragged into it. You know, they've been sort of fairly sort of open and upfront about the position that they were in last summer with this sort of huge fire sale that they went to very much stay within the rules. And lots of hard accounting this year to make sure that they're going to stay with it in this summer as well. And this revolves around the Ruben Neves sale to Al Hilal for 47 million last summer, which came quite early in the window. And we were all quite, I guess, surprised when it happened that early, and indeed his destination. But yeah, in the commission's report into Forrest, it said, I'll read you the section. The commission did note Forrest's submission that Wolves had managed to sell a player in the same two-week period to avoid a PSR breach, although no evidence of these facts was put before the commission at the hearing or in the documents. It also noted the admission at the hearing that not many players are sold in that part of the summer transfer window. So this was in May. So yeah, Wolves accounts run until May the 31st, which is slightly different to how other clubs do it, which I guess has the advantage of all the June activity sort of falling into the following year's accounts. Wolves' bigger concern is the 2021 to 2024 period, hence the massive fire sale last summer where they sold a whole chunk of their squad. They're quite tight on it, but they budgeted for a lower league position this season. So if they'd finished 17th, I think they still would have just sort of finished inside the numbers. So finishing top 10 is, you know, a massive help for them. I think they'd have been around 3 million inside the cutoff point if they'd finished 17th. So yeah, I guess it's relatable to Forrest anyway, because, you know, Forrest could have sold Brennan Johnson in this sort of time frame, but waited until the end of the summer to sell him to Spurs. And that felt like quite a deliberate, you know, thing to kind of hold on and try and get a larger transfer for him. And obviously he played in matches at the start of the season, which I think is also quite contentious. So yeah, that's how Wolves got dragged into it, but they're pretty clear that they're going to be okay just about.
Yeah, Matt, the Brennan Johnson thing's really fascinating because obviously the PSR rules are in there for profitability and sustainability, but you know, we're dealing with a bunch of very, very rich men who will find loopholes. Is this possibly something we could see as a bit of a loophole as we move on into a new season? You know, you hold on to a player, maybe for a few games, get him to, you know, get you a couple of points and then sell him. Maybe then a little slap on the wrist at the back end, 4 points. It's all right. At least we got through August.
There's a very short answer to that, AO, and it's no, because Forrest tried that argument. It was one of their mitigating factors. They proposed six. And it was categorically rejected. I think, whilst Forest fans will disagree, because this is just the way these things go, you see these things through the, you know, the lens of your club, and it all gets quite tribal. But I think most people would sort of see why they lost this. Their argument was it was a near miss, and they should, you know, that there was no dispute that they told him too late, but it was a near miss. And they talked about this concept of golden mitigation, or just near miss mitigation. On this one, it was very obvious from quite a long way out that Forest were going to be in trouble, and the Premier League warned them. And the Premier League thought they probably should have been selling in the January 23 window. They didn't. In fact, they bought. So that, you know, annoyed might be the wrong word, but the Premier League noted that and sort of thought you probably shouldn't be doing that. I think Forest kind of realised coming out of that window they were going to have to sell a player to get within by the end of June. And that player was obviously Johnson, homegrown. So you get the big hit in your balance sheets, in your profit loss, and they started marketing him, and there's some evidence that he changed an agent, which might slow things down, but they sort of were gently marketing him, and the Premier League is asking for evidence, and there were witnesses that appeared in the arbitration, and I don't think the Premier League thought they marketed him particularly hard, and it looks like the commission agreed. There was an offer that came in for him that was very late. I think it was June the 30th. That was from Atletico Madrid for 50 million euros. Forest immediately countered with 65 million euros. But Atletico's bid did come in very late, and it was contingent on them being able to sell a player. So Forest clearly felt it couldn't happen, so wasn't a realistic offer in their view. The Premier League did sort of think, well, maybe if you had at least agreed it on Atletico being able to sell that player, maybe that would have then been a near miss. And then I think they clearly felt that the offers Forest received for Johnson from Brentford in July and into August, there was a bit of give and take. Brentford came in, I think, at quite low at 30. Quite quickly went to 35. And I think might have got as far as 40 by August. That, again, might have been more of a near miss than what you actually chose to do, was to sell him on the very last day of the window for a good price, 47.5. So very, very near their initial valuation. Well done, you. Good piece of business. But you cannot claim that was a near miss when you'd had previous offers and you'd played him three times. So you had gained a sporting advantage. So look, to go back to your question, no, I don't think we're going to see this unless it is a genuine near miss, like closer in time, but also I think closer in effort.
Matt, I was going to say, do you think, obviously, I think we saw in the January window once the Everton bombshell had dropped, that clubs were scared off spending when there's, you know, January was so dry, wasn't it? So the deterrent seemed to work, right? But you talked about sort of dialogue with Premier League and Forest, maybe back in Jan 23 window, you know, to be careful. Do you think they were aware that a points deduction was even on the table, but sort of gambled anyway?
The actual warning they received, if I remember correctly, I read it last night, was on June the 6th. So not in Jan. But there had already been exchange of information between Nottingham Forest and the league in terms of their forecasts for where they would be. On your point around the Everton precedent, which did things, that all came later, didn't it? So no, at the point, at the crucial point, if you like, in the Brennan Johnson part of this story, I think it was still a little bit untested as to how bad this would be. And the Premier League certainly feels, and I would argue that the commission has agreed with them, that Forest sort of felt, we're going to breach. We know we're going to breach by about 30-odd. We've got this player who we have decided to sell. We know we're going to sell him. We actually made a decision to sell him, you know, coming out of the January 23 window. There were the efforts to sort of market him started coming into June. We did receive a bid from Atletico. It was very late, but we received another bid from Brentford. The first thing I think was in July. But they clearly, I think, took the view that we don't know how bad breaching PSR is, actually. We're going to sell him. We've breached. We've missed the deadline. We're going to argue that we tried. We failed. Let's see what the Premier League make of that. So the kind of, oh my God, factor of Everton hadn't been set yet. That, I think, is where the behaviour changes for all clubs. So I'm not sure we can sort of give Forest too much credit for sort of... I don't think we can say that Forest fully realised maybe the significance of a breach at that point. And that's fair enough because no one did. But I think they did know they were taking the near miss mitigation to the very, you know, edge of the envelope.
You're listening to the Athletic FC podcast with Ayo Akinwalere.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Tim, I was wondering if this is where it gets a bit sticky for the fans. I mean, we've talked about the courts, we've talked about the boardrooms, but, you know, I was at Luton just before they played Forest, actually, on Friday, and I was talking to a Nottingham Forest fan, and he's like, I don't really know what this game means, really, because we're expecting to hear at some point this afternoon or late this evening what our fate is. If we win, we win. If we draw, we draw. But there's a chance that we're not going to be in the same league position. Isn't that just get a bit sticky, that it's not happening on the pitch, the decisions of where your team ends at the end of the season, but actually behind the scenes in the courtroom?
You say sticky, I say farcical, to be honest. You know, there's been three modifications to the table already this season. And, you know, we're in late March now and teams are going into big six pointers like Luton Forest or Everton go to Bournemouth next weekend and they've got Burnley coming up. You know, is a point a good result or do we have another deduction on the way so we need to win this one? That is not sustainable. You cannot have that going into this last stage of the season. I know clubs have broken the rules, but this needs to be decided either a cut-off point, you know, midway through the season or ideally, and I don't even know if this is possible with the way that the accounts are done, but in an ideal world, it'd be done in the summer, right? When everyone's on 0 points. And then you start the season knowing exactly what you're dealing with. Yeah, changing the goalposts in the middle of the season really reduces the sporting integrity element of it, in my opinion. And that's without even getting started on Man City, who are the huge elephant in the room and the one that all fans are sort of talking about as to, you know, well, this isn't fair if they breached rules allegedly and haven't been punished and other clubs are. So yeah, there's got to be some kind of cut-off point, I think, because this is changing how games are played out, and that's just not right.
Yeah, Matt, we talk about profit and sustainability, right? But which team actually does turn profit? Real talk, like what is profitable and what is sustainable? I mean, these are multi-million pound organisations. You know, fans really want to see success on the field, but like who genuinely turns out real profit in the Premier League?
Yeah, not many. I mean, look, prior to COVID, the Premier League had got itself into position, you know, thanks to its amazing TV deals, largely. Almost, you know, almost entirely, to be honest, and also kind of the big money that the big clubs would earn from UEFA for Champions League runs and the global sponsorship deals. So, you know, look, yeah, going into COVID, several clubs were making profits, small profits. You know, certainly started to compare them to sort of FTSE 250 companies. You know, pretty insignificant, but certainly in terms of sporting teams, not bad. The Premier League certainly was washing its face. Now, COVID sort of changed things a bit. Pretty much everyone lost money. And it's taken a while, I think, for sort of things, the ship to steady. I think we are now starting to see small profits again in the Premier League, particularly if you've had a good run. So like Manchester City, you know, if you've had an amazing season. And also, look, promoted teams nearly always make a profit in their first season because they have this enormous boost to their revenue. In fact, we saw this very clearly in the Forest case. You know, their revenue went from something like 30 million, I think, in their last season of the Championship to 150 odd. So again, you know, this idea that, you know, that they were this unique case and they had to lose money. Well, you know, not really. And lots of other promoted clubs don't. You know, you did choose to spend whatever it was, 140 net spend. That was your business choice. The whole profitability part of the rule is a bit odd. It's a misnomer. Like so many of the rules, you know, the fit and proper person test, which they actually ditched because it was just embarrassing. So sustainability, I think, is the key word here. And that is the sort of guiding principle of these rules, that they are trying to make the industry sustainable. Whether this is the best tool, whether it's working, is a debate for another day. But that is the guiding principle here.
I wonder if in the summer then, to balance the books, and it's all new, as we were all saying, we just see a summer of mass selling as well as buying in many respects, Matt?
All right, there's a few things to sort of unpack there. So if we're sort of saying that the Everton and Forest case now have kind of sort of changed the weather, changed the landscape and therefore behaviour, then yes, I think there are a whole number of clubs that are right up against it for this season's, for the stuff we'll be talking about next season. And I think we are going to enter a little mini period now where there are almost sort of two transfer deadline days. This sort of June 30th, so the window is going to get done in two now. This sort of June, this rush to sell by June 30th. And then this, oh, well, everyone else has got till, you know, the end of whatever it is, August or early September, to sort of, you know, to do that. So that's going to be interesting. Now, how long that lasts, because everyone knows we're going to go into sort of a new regime soon. And I think people would probably agree that's probably not the best way of doing this. If our guiding principle is sustainability, you know, because those people trying to sell early in the window will be rushing, they won't get full value. And we want people to get full value, don't we, if we care about sustainability. So there are all these unintended consequences and things that quite frankly are illogical about where we're at. But that's where we're at. The club set these rules, right? Never forget that. So, yes, I think there is going to be some sales. But then the bigger picture here is why have we done all these pods recently on this? Why are all these cases? And it's because, and I go back to COVID, COVID hit the entire industry hard for obvious reasons. It hit everyone hard, all of us hard. The Premier League came through it relatively better than others because it managed the crisis well, and it has these amazing TV revenues. And it collectively decided that when everyone else is hurting more than us, let's put our foot on the gas a bit. And for the next window or two, the only clubs that were buying players anywhere in Europe were Premier League clubs. All of them. Okay, there's going to be some exceptions. But pretty much all of them decided to keep buying. And there was some sense in that. There was some game theory in that. This is a chance now to gain a relative advantage on our rivals' weaknesses. However, there's no such thing as a free lunch. And this is, I think, the undiscussed, undebated part of the debate. We're here for a reason. We're here because Premier League clubs came out of COVID and decided to keep spending on transfer fees and on wages. And here we are, a year or two later, and suddenly everyone's like, oh my God, we never used to talk about clubs breaching the 105 threshold. No, we didn't, because it was set this ludicrously high threshold a few years ago. The Premier League bosses, Richard Scudamore, never thought anyone would breach it. It's considerably higher than UEFA rules, than the UEFA threshold that they were set upon, because they wanted to encourage the Premier League clubs to keep spending. They never thought anyone would get near breaching it, and yet here we are.
Tim, let's just twist the lens a little bit. Let's look at, you know, you're a club like Getafe or Union Berlin, looking at the Premier League, these clubs with like insane wealth. I mean, what kind of message is it sending about the state of the Premier League? You know, you've got a lot of these clubs who are just managing to keep things together. And then you've got these multi-billion pound clubs who are just don't know how to get their books in order.
Yeah, I guess that we had to reach a tipping point at some point. Right. It seems it's gone far beyond for so many years now. I mean, Matt says, you know, keen for a sustainable industry, but certainly not a level playing field, you know, within the league. And I understand that. I understand why in this age of sort of endless wealth and spending, when you've got Burnley earning more than PSG, was the one that was sort of well quoted a couple of years ago, it's weird and it's unsustainable. But, you know, as a fan of a club, of a team outside the top six, you know, sort of dreams of always of Wolves returning to that to that bracket at the top. But the rulings like this make that, you know, even more unlikely than it's been in the sort of the past 10, 15 years since City were the last ones to really establish themselves in there. And they got in there, what, just the right time before financial fair play was really sort of introduced. I guess until there's a cap on how much you spend full stop, you know, there will never be a sort of a level playing field. You know, Everton breached in part because of their stadium. That's part of their ambition to grow themselves as a club. Forest breached in part because of signing all these players, which of course they had to because they barely had a squad when they came into the Premier League. And they wanted to compete and they only stayed up by, what, 4 points with the best manager of their generation, despite all that money that they spent. So clubs have all these ambitions, but they're not playing in the same league, you know, as those above them at the top. And that's why fans of Forest and Everton and Newcastle and Villa, you know, who have had to be selling players in the summer, will feel that this is unfair, really. And again, I point to the Man City elephant in the room of still not knowing what their punishment's going to be. So until there's a wage cap or transfer fees are abolished or there's an equal limit on spending, none of these things are ever going to happen. And the gap's just going to get wider.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This is the Athletic FC podcast with Ayo Akinwalere.
As a way, I guess, of trying to rectify things, Matt, Tuesday saw the first reading of the Football Governance Bill, you know, the first step to introduce an independent regulator. Okay, is this a big moment? Do we believe in it, first and foremost?
Well, do you believe in it, Ayo? Are you suggesting it didn't happen?
I'm trying to be impartial. From what I've seen, is all I'm going to say.
Okay. Well, you can believe that it happened, so I can assure you that. It's on the Parliament website. The bill's there, 130 pages. It's an even drier read, so actually don't read that one. Do read the Forest judgment.
Matt's putting the hard yards for us all here, we've got to say.
You can definitely skim read. Definitely skim read the Forest judgment. Do not read the bill. The bill is a different language, but whatever, right? But there are some briefing notes. In fact, read our stories about it. Do that. Read our stories about it. Yeah. So it definitely happened. I think it's going to go through pretty quickly. That was one of the sort of whole conversations about, you know, would they, having promised us, you know, put it in their manifesto and done the FENEB review and done the white paper and all the consultation, would this government run out of time? I think they're going to be okay. I've learned about parliamentary procedure. So, you know, there's a couple of readings. It goes to a committee stage where people can sort of fiddle with it. It goes to the Lords and then finally Royal Assent. I think it's going to go through, right? So that bit you can believe, but I don't think that was your question, was it really? It's whether it's going to work. And I've sort of spent a couple of days, well, in fact, I've spent months and months writing about this. People get very ideological about, does any regulation work? And they also get quite, sort of dismissive about it and negative and start sort of talking about, well, there's sewage in our rivers and pensions get robbed, and without ever sort of acknowledging that maybe it would be even worse if there wasn't a regulator, or that there's loads of regulators out there quietly, diligently doing their work, and we never read about them or hear about them because it's boring. Good news is boring, or no news is boring. But anyway, that's perhaps a little bit philosophical. Will this one work? I don't know. And I don't know. I don't think anyone knows until it's up and running. And I don't think it's going to be up and running, but as I sort of said, there's some legal bits to get through. Some because it is law, and they've got to hire. It's not going to be up and running till early 2025. And the very first thing it's going to do, and I think this is possibly the best thing it will do, is a big state of the game report. And this is to sort of really work out what's going on, what are the problems around sustainability. So that, I think, is a great starting point. And they're talking about doing it every 3 years, which I think is a great idea. So instead of having these rows, the EFL saying one thing, the Premier League saying another, someone else coming over here. We're going to have someone else, ideally, you know, this independent, big state of the nation report. Now, will it work? Well, I think it can work, because actually it's not trying to solve everything. It really isn't. I think its aims are modest. Some people think too modest. Its remit is narrow. Some people think too narrow. But it's going to run a licensing regime, which is going to be a very light touch, It's not FFP, it's not PSR, that is a football rule. So the league's going to carry on running that. There will be some crossover. This licensing regime will be around, do you have a business plan? Can you meet it? You know, do you report on time? Do you owe the tax man money? Do you owe clubs money? You know, kind of stuff that I think we all agree on. You know, there's a licensing regime already for clubs that compete in UEFA competition. So it's broadening that out. It's extending that down to the National League. So it's five divisions, 116 clubs. As part of this licensing regime, there'll be some stuff around fan engagement. There'll be stuff around the protection of club heritage. One of other bits of its scope is kind of to take on the owners and directors test, you know, the vetting of owners and the vetting of current owners, this sort of onward certification process, which again, I think we all agree, I think it's a good idea. And I think the leagues would actually quite like to hand that job over. There's other bits in there about this sort of ban on clubs breaking away, leaving to a competition that would harm the domestic competition, and this breakaway wouldn't be fair and meritocratic. So absolutely. So let's not forget the starting point for this was the breakaway European Super League. That is what convinced Boris Johnson there might be votes in regulating football, and it led to the fan-led review, and it led to the white paper, and blah blah blah. And it brought in then the wider concerns about your Berries and your Macclesfields and your Boltons and the sustainability issue. So, but it was the starting point. The catalyst was the breakaway European Super League. So can it do those things? Yes, I think it can. It absolutely can. Is it going to solve every problem? No. Is it going to get us 116 perfect owners? Is it going to mean that we never have an administration? No. Is it going to go to Tim's, you know, point and argument? Is it going to make the turn the Premier League into the NFL? Whereas in any given Sunday feel to it, and fans of Bournemouth or Crystal Palace can genuinely start the season and go, we might win this year. No, it really depends on what you think is realistic, what you want it to do. But if you go into it with fairly modest expectations, which is what my rule in life, then yeah, I think it could be okay.
Yeah, I guess the next one really is who's funding it, right? It's like, you know, if it's supposed to be relatively independent.
Oh, well, I can do that. Well, I can do that one pretty quickly, right? So it's going to be funded by a levy on the clubs. And a lot of this stuff is to be decided. The indicative budget, which I think is quite interesting, it came out this week. It was an answer to a question I asked. They're thinking in terms of around 10 million, which is pretty small, frankly. If you look at sort of Ofcom and Ofwat and even the Gambling Commission, it's a small budget for a regulator. I don't think the staff's going to be massive. I think we're talking about 100 people. We have they've already appointed an interim chief operating officer. He is in place. His name is Martin Henderson. I wrote about him a few months ago. He's already sort of building some of the team, building some of the infrastructure. The key hire is the chair. That's the key hire. And then from there, you get the exec, the chief exec and the board, and everything else will sort of flow from there. And I think, as I said, the first piece of work will be that state of the game review it does. So the independence is a good debate. You know, how independent are any of these people? Yeah, you know, we can have a good old philosophical chinwag about that if you like. But it is an arm's length, non-departmental body. And we shall see if it works. I think it's certainly worth a go.
Yeah, Tim, I just wanted to touch on that sense of independence, really, if it's been funded by clubs, but also we've got a growing group of people within the Premier League with very different cultural ideas of making money and how to make profit on that money. Could this be quite tricky to police?
Is there any such a thing as independence in football? You know, when it comes to an independent body, is that even possible? You know, with the tribalistic nature of football, no one on Twitter will tell you that it ever will be fully independent and neutral. But they'd also say it's better than it being government led, I think, at this point as well. So, I think it's, everybody would agree this is a good idea. And it's interesting that Matt talks about the ambitions of it. And obviously, if it stops another Berry and it stops, you know, the Super League, if that's the limit of the limit of its ambitions and that works, then that's definitely a good thing. But, you know, we're talking about the inequality in the Premier League in this podcast, and there's no chance of that stopping. You know, the game has eaten itself, you know, a long time ago. But I think, yeah, in terms of stopping another Berry and a Super League, those are definitely good ambitions and realistic ambitions to have, and that's why it's a good thing.
I should probably just add that that levy, the, you know, how this is funded, is going to be kind of means tested, right? So the those with the broader shoulders will pay the most, right? The Premier League will pay more than the EFL and the National League, and the richest clubs in the Premier League will pay more than the poorest clubs. So I don't think, you know, the individual contributions, even at the top end, are going to be massive, and they're going to be affordable for, you know, Man City's and your Man United's, etc.
And super finally, Matt, you know, this new deal for football.
Oh.
Will this independent regulator be able to step in on that as well?
Well, this is probably the most contentious part of it all. So it does have, well, it's proposed to have, once it becomes law, backstop powers to intervene if the leagues, if the game, the industry, cannot decide on a financial distribution. Now, this has been a real ding-dong battle. We've talked about this, haven't we? This new deal for football, which is, you know, basically more money to flow down the pyramid. And it's kind of a 30-year saga. Let's not forget that the Premier League was a breakaway league once upon a time, and was about taking more of the money for the biggest clubs. Now, post-COVID and post-Barry Maxfield, et cetera, there's been a sort of very broad, I think, consensus that the Premier League could share a bit more. And there's a big, then we're haggling, right? We're haggling about the percentage. And also the mechanism and the caveats and the strings that come with it and cost controls, because everyone looks at the Championship and goes, well, what's the point of giving you a lot more money? Look at you. My God. And the Championship going, yeah, we agree. So look, there's been a big debate about it. The Premier League has not been able to agree amongst itself, though, on the amount, who's funding it, and really the offer, the package. There's been an enormous row about it, and it's because the Premier League is hopelessly split for some of the reasons that Tim discussed. You know, it's a strange and unhappy place at the moment. So it hasn't had an offer. We've had no new deal. Now, the independent regulator does have these backstop powers, and the EFL have been waiting for this to happen. So they are very, of all the parties, they are the most happy. Now, how is it triggered? How does it actually work? How will it intervene? Again, all to be discussed and seen. We do, though, because we can see, some of us have read the bloody bill and read some of the helpful briefing notes as well. It would have to be triggered by someone. So someone would have to say, I am asking you, regulator, to get involved. And there are certain conditions, i.e. there is no deal, right? The deal has run out. So there's an absence of deal. Can you please jump in? Or I think another one that's quite interesting, The landscape has changed significantly, i.e. the Premier League has just got a massive new TV deal. Can you have a look? The terms are no longer the same. So I think those are probably your most likely circumstances for someone jumping in to go, all right. And then you're right. There would then be this assessment by this regulator of what is fair, which is why I go back to my point that I think the most important thing they will do is this state of game report. They will look and go, right, where's the tensions? Where are the flashing lights? Okay, how much can you really afford? What is your funding gap? Where's the sustainability problems here? With that knowledge, I think an intervention from this independent regulator is a positive and is a good thing, and we'll bang some heads together. I also, though, wonder now that the government has gone ahead and done this, if the Premier League, it concentrates some minds around the table and goes, okay, you know what? We should probably offer them that deal, shouldn't we? That's been out there for sort of 6 months. We should probably go ahead and formalise the deal and offer it to the EFL.
Well, I can see us, if not at the end of the season, top end of next season, talking about this again, Matt, because I can't see this being resolved anytime soon. Thanks so much for your time, gentlemen, Matt and Tim. And don't forget to rate and review the podcast. Speak soon.
You've been listening to the Athletic FC podcast. The producers were Guy Clark, Mike Stavrou and Jay Beale. The executive producer was Amy Moorhead. To listen to other great Athletic podcasts for free, search for The Athletic on Apple, Spotify, and all the usual places. The Athletic FC podcast is an Athletic Media Company production.
The Athletic.